Hey, it's Craig. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Canadian History X early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Greetings and welcome to another episode of Canadian History X. Before I continue, on July 26th at 3 p.m., I'm going to be hosting another Zoom History Conference. This conference is all about the Great Lakes White Hurricane of 1913. It's a really interesting story. Registration is $5 or free for my patrons. You can be a patron for as little as $3 a month by going to patreon.com/CanadaEHX. If you'd like to register for the conference, you can. Just email me at craig@CanadaEHX.com or go to my website and click on register. Go to CanadaEHX.com. There were many important Indigenous leaders during the 19th century across Canada. And today I am looking at one of the most important in the prairies, and a man whose legacy stretches into today. He is Chief Poundmaker, and he is a fascinating individual. His name and his language, and I am doing my best to pronounce this, was Pitiquahanapiwian, but I will be referring to him as Poundmaker throughout this episode. Born around 1842 near Battleford, he was given his name for his ability to attract bison into pounds, which was a trap used by the Indigenous to kill and harvest the bison. According to the oral traditions of the Cree, he was gifted by spirit helpers, and he would sing and drum a special song to entice the lead bison of the herd into the enclosure. The son of Sitkak Wayan, an Assiniboine medicine man, and the sister of Cree chief Miskawasis, the family was living near Great Slave Lake when his father would suddenly die. At this point, his mother took him and his siblings to live with her parents in the Red Pheasant Band, near Battleford. Soon after, his mother would die and Poundmaker, his brother Yellow Mudblanket, and his sister would be raised by the Cree community. As an adult, Poundmaker would gain prominence in the Canadian prairies during the negotiations in 1876 of Treaty 6. He did not believe that the treaty was favorable to his people, and he was opposed to the agreement. He asked government how they could lay claim to the territory, stating, "This is our land. It isn't a piece of pemmican, to be cut off and given little pieces back to us. It is ours, and we will take what we want." Unfortunately, other chiefs wanted to sign the treaty, and Poundmaker would sign it as well. It was not that Poundmaker was against the treaty. He was fighting for a good treaty for his people. He would say to Lieutenant Governor Alexander Morris, "From what I can hear and see now, I cannot understand that I shall be able to clothe my children and feed them as long as the sun shines and water runs." After the signing of the treaty, he would split off from the main band to form his own band, and in 1881, the band would settle 40 kilometers northwest of Fort Battleford. In 1873, he had been adopted by Crowfoot, the chief of the Blackfoot, which greatly increased his influence. Crowfoot had adopted Poundmaker after Crowfoot lost his son in a battle between the Cree and the Blackfoot, as a means of replacing his fallen son. Crowfoot would give Poundmaker the name Wolf Thin Legs. As Poundmaker expected, the government did not fulfill its promises, and he became more critical of the Canadian government as a result. Poundmaker did what he could to adapt to the new life on the reserve, learning farming, and even sending his son to be educated by priests. Unfortunately, most of the farms failed on the reserves, much like most of the settlers' farms did before dry land farming techniques were developed in the early 20th century. Robert Jefferson, the farm instructor on the Poundmaker Reserve, would write about his interactions with Poundmaker after the death of the chief. He would say that Poundmaker was tall and good-looking, slightly built with an intelligent face, in which a large Roman nose was prominent. His bearing was so eminently dignified, and his speech was so well adapted to the occasion as to impress every hearer with his earnest and his views. In 1881, Poundmaker was asked to accompany Lauren Campbell, the Governor General of Canada, during a tour from Battleford to Blackfoot Crossing. The Governor General was incredibly impressed with Poundmaker, especially his knowledge of Cree culture and his philosophy as a peacemaker. With the bison gone and the farms failing, the Indigenous would invoke their Treaty 6 rights for food rations, but more often than not, they were denied assistance. In June of 1884, Poundmaker and Big Bear, along with other Cree leaders, would assemble on Poundmaker's reserve to form a plan of action as food and supplies were inconsistent from the government. To gather spiritual strength, they held a sun dance. The Northwest Mounted Police would disrupt the dance, searching for a warrior who had assaulted John Craig, a farm instructor on a different reserve. With 90 men, the police told Poundmaker and Big Bear to hand the man over. Both refused, and while the man was found and arrested eventually, the two chiefs were instrumental in preventing a large-scale conflict at that moment with the Northwest Mounted Police. By the mid-1880s, the bison were nearly eliminated from the prairies by overhunting and government policies, which was increasing the starvation of Poundmaker's people. With his people in desperate need for food, Poundmaker traveled south to Battleford in 1885, just as the Northwest Rebellion was beginning. The oral history states that Poundmaker went to the fort to speak with the Indian agent. At the same time, the settlers around Battleford had heard reports of large numbers of Cree and Assiniboine people leaving reserves and making their way to Battleford, and they believed the indigenous were coming for them. On March 30, 1885, those settlers began to seek shelter in Fort Battleford, and when Poundmaker and his party reached Battleford, the town, not the fort, he was told the Indian agent would not meet with him. For the next 2 days, Poundmaker waited, and the telegrams coming out of the fort stated that Poundmaker was waiting to attack, which was not the case. Peter Ballantyne exited the fort and checked Poundmaker's plans and found that Poundmaker's intentions were peaceful only. There was also looting taking place of the town, now abandoned, and while the settlers stated it was Poundmaker's people doing the looting, one observer said they had seen the looting being done by the whites. In fact, according to the oral history, the Nakota people were doing the looting and Poundmaker did his best to stop it. With no one meeting him, Poundmaker chose to leave and set up an encampment at Cutknife Hill. On May 2, 1885, Lieutenant Colonel William Otter arrived with a force of 332 Canadian troops at Fort Battleford and requested permissions to, in his words, make Poundmaker pay. He would take his force to Cutknife Hill, and they attacked Poundmaker's encampment. To say that this battle did not go well for Otter would be an understatement. Unfamiliar with the land, Otter and his men had to ford Cutknife Creek, and in doing so, they made enough noise that a Cree man named Jacob with long hair heard them and alerted the camp. Otter then set up two cannons and a Gatling gun and began firing into the camp. At first there was confusion, and women and children were running for safety in the ravine. A group of Assiniboine warriors then charged Otter's men to stop them from killing the women and children, while Fine Day went to the top of Cutknife Hill to coordinate the attack against the Canadian militia. The method he used was to have the warriors fight in small groups. One group would charge forward and attack, then rush to the ravine, as another group of warriors were rushing out of the second ravine to attack. This prevented Otter from knowing how many indigenous there were attacking, and it caused complete confusion in the ranks. After 6 hours of fighting, Otter and the Canadian militia retreated, having suffered 8 dead and 14 wounded, while the Cree and Assiniboine, who numbered 50 to 250, suffered 5 dead and 3 wounded. Poundmaker had not taken part in the fight, but as Otter and his men began to flee, he prevented the band's fighters from pursuing the soldiers and killing them. His actions likely saved dozens of lives. He is said to have said to his warriors, "They have come here to fight us, and we have defended ourselves, our women, and our children. Now we let them go." In the New York Times, it would say across the front page, "Defeated by Indians, Colonel Otter routed by Chief Poundmaker," which made it seem as though Poundmaker was a rebel looking for blood, when this was not the case. Several of Poundmaker's warriors planned to join the Métis forces at Batoche, which Poundmaker was against. Nonetheless, they left, and en route they captured a wagon train carrying supplies and took the men from the supply train as prisoners. Hearing this, Poundmaker would intervene to ensure that the prisoners were not harmed. A few weeks later, he would receive news of the defeat of the Northwest Rebellion at Batoche, and he would choose to surrender. Louis Riel had written a letter that contained Poundmaker's name, and Poundmaker was convicted of treason as a result and sentenced to 3 years in Stone Mountain Penitentiary. He would say to Riel, You did not catch me. I gave myself up. I wanted peace. Poundmaker's trial had lasted 2 days, and the jury took only half an hour to return a guilty verdict. During his trial, he would state, "Everything that is bad has been laid against me this summer. There is nothing of it true. Had I wanted war, I would not be here now. I should be on the prairie. You did not catch me. I gave myself up. You got me because I wanted justice." Thanks to Crowfoot, his adopted father, and the power he held, Poundmaker was spared having his hair cut in prison. According to legend, Poundmaker stated, "I would rather die than be in that place," referring to Stone Mountain Penitentiary. Father Lacombe, the legendary missionary who Lacombe, Alberta is named for, went to Ottawa to plead for the pardon of Poundmaker. Whether because of Lacombe or a review of the evidence that showed Poundmaker took no part in the fighting, he would only serve 7 months. On July 4, 1886, he would die at the age of 44 from a lung hemorrhage while visiting his adopted father, Crowfoot. He was buried at Blackfoot Crossing, where his remains were kept until 1967, when they were reburied at Poundmaker Reserve in Saskatchewan. On May 23, 2019, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau traveled to Poundmaker Cree Nation and officially exonerated Poundmaker and cleared his name. This is a clip from that ceremony.
In the hills of west central Saskatchewan, on the reserve that bears the name of a revered and wrongly convicted First Nations leader, the Prime Minister arrived to set right a historic wrong and recognize a true legacy, something the descendants of Cree Chief Poundmaker have long worked for. Bonnie Allen was there.
A symbolic climb up a steep hill, the same path government forces took 134 years ago to ambush Chief Poundmaker and his people. Today, the Prime Minister came in peace, armed with an apology and this.
I am here today on behalf of the Government of Canada to confirm without reservation that Chief Poundmaker is fully exonerated of any crime or wrongdoing.
Redemption at last, celebrated in a ceremony punctuated with poignant symbolic moments, like this handshake with the current chief. Long ago, a Canadian general refused to shake hands with Poundmaker.
What happened today, here, we will never forget.
Today, the Poundmaker Cree Nation continues to live on near Cut Knife. Poundmaker's grandnephew, John Tatousis, would become a prominent Cree leader as chief of his band, beginning in 1920. The Canadian government did not recognize his leadership, stating that a chief had to be at least 25 and John was 21. Nonetheless, he stayed on as chief and would serve as the first president of the Federation of Saskatchewan Indian Nations. In 1986, he would be awarded the Order of Canada. Poundmaker's great-grandnephew, Gordon Tatousis, would become a highly respected Canadian actor and the founding member of the Saskatchewan Native Theatre Company. He would go on to appear as Albert Golo in 52 episodes of North of 60, as well as in several movies and television shows. He would win a Gemini Award and be nominated 3 times. In 2004, he would be awarded the Order of Canada. In the game Civilization VI, Poundmaker is the leader that players can choose when they pick the Cree as their nation. There was a news story about Poundmaker being in the game and the inaccurate portrayal of him in it.
A First Nation in Saskatchewan is considering legal action against a California video game company over a new video game called Civilization VI, where the gamer can play an Indigenous character during colonialism, but not just any character, Chief Poundmaker, who has been seen by many as someone who played a pivotal role in our country's history. To tell us a little bit more about why this story has made headlines, we're joined by Milton Tatousis, headman and counselor of the Poundmaker tribe. Thanks for joining us today, Milton.
Yeah, well, yes, good morning, and thanks for having me on your program.
Yeah. Milton, your voice has made quite the rumble across national headlines.
Apparently, it caught me a little off guard myself, but yeah, absolutely, we're taking a stand.
And one of the things we want to know is we want you to explain to us why this is such an important topic for you and your community.
Well, first and foremost, we believe this is an act of cultural appropriation, and I had to learn really quickly what that movement was about. And it's all online. There's a lot of information there about the Navajo Nation taking urban outfitters to task. There's a couple cases here in Canada, like the Cowichan sweaters in the West Coast, Vans T-shirts on the West Coast, and even in my time. At least a decade ago, I was becoming more and more aware of indigenous cultures being expropriated and exploited and misrepresented. For example, in the NFL, we have the Washington Redskins. There's been a lot of academic scholarly work as to why that's offensive and why the NFL and the Washington team should reconsider using that name on an ongoing basis and so on. So again, it's really an act of cultural appropriation. We want to raise awareness about that.
And Milton, I also think in watching some of the video game that it seems quite racist as well. I feel like, you know, you have Chief Poundmaker and he's going through this land through a time of brutality and violence of his people. How do you feel about that?
Well, when we first saw it, I thought it was actually kind of cool that Poundmaker, our famous chief, our iconic leader is in a game. But then when I looked further into it and saw the trailer and started searching online with Civilization VI and understanding the themes, like it's still these games are potentially very harmful to naive gamers, particularly young people, maybe millennials, whoever plays these games. I'm not a gamer myself, but immediately these thoughts came across my mind after some analysis, and that is we're still trying to work our way out of the tremendous, horrific, negative impacts of colonization, imperialism, these concepts of doctrine of discovery and genocide, which is a very strong term that's been used, but it's been reused particularly from the fallout of the Indian residential school experience here in Canada and indeed in the USA. So again, it's very alarming that our chief, first of all, we did not give consent as a Poundmaker Cree Nation government. Our elders are very not happy that Chief Poundmaker is being portrayed in a way that totally contradicts the values that he represents.
In July 2018, for the first time since 1885, several personal belongings of Chief Poundmaker were returned to the Poundmaker Reserve and are housed at the Poundmaker Museum and Historic Site. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Canadian History X and our look at Chief Poundmaker. If you did, give a rating and review. You can reach me at craig@canadaehx.com. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/canadaehx. You can find many videos I do on Canadian history on my YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/canadianhistoryx. And you can visit my website where you'll find hundreds of articles on Canada's history at canadax.com. Information comes from the Canadian Encyclopedia, Wikipedia, Virtual Saskatchewan, Biography.ca, The Star, The Plains Indians, Sask Culture, and PoundmakerCN.ca. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.